Was Sir Isaac Newton wrong? In particular, was Sir Isaac Newton wrong about gravity? Or at least, was he not 100% correct? In this interview, we learn about modified Newtonian dynamics, or MOND, a new version of Newton's law of gravity.
So MOND is basically a modification of the classical gravity of Newton, designed to fit the motion of stars inside galaxies, which are not fitted by the classical gravity equation of Newton, if you don't add something that we call dark matter.
Dr. Benoît Fermé from l'Université Libre de Bruxelles.
Okay, so explain what we think dark matter is.
So basically the thing is that if you observe all the matter that is inside a galaxy and apply Newton's law to it, you see that the stars are moving much too fast. And so the basic idea is that this is because we are not observing actually all the matter which is inside a galaxy. So this idea might seem quite odd that we are not seeing all the mass, but In some sense, it's not very different than just thinking quite a while ago that we were at the center of the universe and then realizing that we are not at the center of the universe. And in some sense, now we could realize that the matter we are made of is not the main matter of the universe. Mm-hmm. So once again, we would be less important than we think we are. And particle physicists actually have quite a lot of ideas of what those particles that we call dark matter might be. At the moment, it's not detected yet, which means that maybe it doesn't exist. It's not impossible that.
So the option is, instead of suggesting a whole new kind of matter which we cannot see, maybe our understanding of how matter moves, in this case Newton's laws, are some way wrong.
Exactly.
Okay.
When observation doesn't work, you can think that either the ingredients, the observed ingredients that you have put inside your equation are not correct, or that the input ingredients that you have put inside your equation are correct, but that your equation is incorrect.
Right.
So, and MOND is the second option.
But Newton seems to have been right for just about everything else so far. Why all of a sudden is he wrong? Why do we need to change his laws?
So what happens is that Newton has been right for everything that we've observed until now, but it has never been tested for very weak gravity. So we absolutely don't know if we can extrapolate Newton's law, which is like the inverse of the square of the distance, like everybody has learned at school. We don't know if we can extrapolate that to zero gravity. And right. What MOND tells us is that at some point, when you get below a very weak gravity, which is impossible to reach on Earth, which is of the order of the angstrom per second squared, so something which is extremely low, then this law doesn't go like the inverse of the square of the distance, but like the inverse of the distance.
Right, so instead of 1 over d squared, it's possibly 1 over d.
1 over d, exactly.
So and we test this through looking at the motion of stars
inside galaxies, and it works. It seems to work. That's very surprising. You should think this kind of bold modification of the law shouldn't work. And it seems to work in every single galaxy in the universe. At the galactic level, it seems that this kind of modification works very well. So the problem is that when you go on a scale which is larger than galaxies, what we call clusters of galaxies, so many galaxies that are bind together by gravity, once again you can do the same exercise and look how the galaxies move and then infer how much matter you should have if MOND is correct.
Right.
And then once again you have to add dark matter. Right. So if MOND is correct at the galactic side, you still have dark matter at the galaxy cluster size. On the other hand, if MOND is incorrect, it probably tells us something about how dark matter is arranged inside galaxies and inside galaxy clusters. That would be my summary of the state of affair with MOND.
How are we measuring the motion of stars in these galaxies?
So we are just looking at the spectrum of those stars. So you know that stars, at the surface of stars, you have elements. And those elements are characterized by absorption lines, what we call absorption lines. And we know very well for all of these elements how these absorption lines should be ordered inside the spectrum. And we also know that there is something called the Doppler effect, which tells us that given the velocity of an object, you will have a shift in the placement of these Doppler lines. So basically, we know what the elements are in the at the surfaces of these stars, and then we look at the displacement of those lines, and then we can infer the velocity of the stars. We do actually the same for the gas, and the gas is usually neutral hydrogen, which has a typical emission ray in that case, which is the inverse of what the stars does. So the stars do. So this neutral hydrogen sometimes, very rarely, has an emission line. But since there is an awful lot of neutral hydrogen inside galaxies, then this line is constantly seen. And we know that this line is a radial line, actually, the 21 centimeter line. And we also look at how this line is displaced to know how the gas moves inside the galaxies. And we see that the gas and the stars are both obeying the same kind of motion.
Right. How many galaxies do you look at to see, to measure the motion of stars?
So at the moment, MOND has been tested in a couple of hundreds of galaxies, mainly galaxies that are in the field of our observations. If the galaxies are too far away, like very old galaxies at the beginning of the universe, we don't have enough resolution to measure the actual motion of the gas and the stars. So a couple of hundreds of galaxies at the moment have been tested for very precise rotation curves. What we call the rotation curves is the motion of the stars as a function of the radius inside the galaxy.
Right.
If the galaxies are too far away, then we see them as points, and we cannot really give a precise rotation curve and a velocity as a function of radius.
And so MOND, this modification to Newtonian dynamics, works for all of these galaxies.
Exactly. There are some galaxies where there are some uncertainties. There are still some free parameters in MOND. Like when you observe a galaxy, you observe the light from the stars. But do you know what we call the mass-to-light ratio of this galaxy? So given the light that you observe, do you know what the mass should be? So this is what we call a free parameter in the MOND fit. And for some galaxies, some of them, but probably 1% of, so three or four galaxies seem to have a dubious fit, I would say. And another parameter is the distance, because since in MOND the fit depends very much on the strength of the gravity, and the strength of the gravity depends very much on the distance from the center of the galaxy, and the distance from the center of the galaxy depends on our knowledge of the distance of the galaxy itself, because we measure angles.
Yes.
And by trigonometry, we deduce the distance inside the galaxy. So when we have a poor knowledge of the distance of the galaxy itself that we are observing, then there is some room for these galaxies to fit MOND if we change the distance of the galaxy, or if we change the mass-to-light ratio of the galaxy, for example. So there are a couple of dubious fits, but there is still some room to explain them, but the vast majority of them are just fitted with the natural numbers for distance and for mass-to-light.
There are enough galaxies for which you know their distance that you can be fairly certain.
Exactly.
The distance is right.
Exactly.
So why are we talking about Newtonian physics here? Why are we talking about Einstein?
Exactly. So that was one of the main problems of MOND for quite a while. That there was no way to input this modification of Newton gravity inside the modification of gravity that Einstein had already done for the very, very strong gravity regime. So the reason why, when we speak about motions inside galaxies, we are not speaking about Einstein, is that Einstein is equivalent to Newton, where you are in the very weak field regime, and the MOND modification is just a modification in the weak field regime. So in some sense, it's modifying gravity exactly at the opposite side as where Einstein has modified it. So you can play around with Newton and gravity at the weak field limit without playing around with Einstein, and you can get a consistent picture. Of course, afterwards, you need a consistent theory that at the same time predicts general relativity in the very strong gravity regime and predicts MOND in the very weak gravity regime. And that has taken quite a while, and now, since 2004, there are a couple of relativistic theories of MOND that have general relativity as a limit in the strong gravity regime and MOND as a limit in the weak gravity regime. So now it's possible to make cosmology with MOND, which was not possible before, because there was a lack of a relativistic theory. And it's also possible to do gravitational lensing with MOND, which is also fairly interesting, and which was a prediction which was missing from the previous theory of MOND. Mm-hmm. So there has been a big boost in the MOND research since those relativistic theories arrived on the market, I would say.
We are faced with a choice. Either we believe in a class of matter that we can't see, can't detect, or we have to break and rewrite all the textbooks talking about Newtonian dynamics.
Exactly. So that's what makes science exciting, isn't it?
Absolutely. But are we allowed to? Are we allowed to change the rules? Are we allowed to? Newton's law of gravity, with the 1 upon d squared dependence, is written in stone. Are we allowed to do this? Are we allowed to change that too to anything that we like?
Of course. Why wouldn't we be allowed to do it if we don't change the predictions that Newton has made in the solar system, for example, since we are playing around with a very weak gravity regime, which doesn't make any difference in the inner solar system, where we know that Newton is very right, we can do whatever we want. In some sense, Newton didn't derive this gm over r square from any basic principle. He just came to think, okay, this fits.
Yes, it's an empirical.
It's an empirical, and if you take the value of g, what does it mean? It doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. So you can of course play around either with the form of the equation or with the value of g, which could well be not a constant, and why this precise value that Newton has given to it. So in some sense, if Newton at the time had seen the galactic rotation curves, he would have thought my formula is wrong, and we would never have heard about Newton's formula.
Well, possibly. So we have, if you like, a whole range of mathematical expressions describing gravity, from Einstein with the very strong gravitational field to Newton with the middling gravitational field to possibly Mond with the very weak gravitational field. Where's the dividing line between Newtonian dynamics and Mond? Where is that? Can you put it on a linear scale? How far out do we have to go, say, from a source of gravity like the Sun or maybe a big galaxy?
Okay, so in the solar system, you should go about 10 times further away than the Kuiper Belt objects. So that's pretty, pretty far away. That's, I would say, a thousandth of AU, AU being the distance between the Earth and the Sun.
Right. Presumably we can test Mond physics with local objects. Is that true? Or do we have to be somewhere special?
It is true. It is true in the sense that at some points in the solar system, gravity should cancel. That's what we call the Lagrange points. And there, where gravity cancels, you are exactly in the very weak gravity regime of Mond. And so the position of these Lagrange points may be slightly different in Mond than in Newtonian gravity. That would be a first way to test it. And there are some hopes that these kind of things can be tested in the near future. Another way would be to test the motion of objects in the very outer solar system. And very surprisingly, there is already a very surprising observation in the outer solar system, which is called the Pioneer Anomaly.
Yeah, explain that.
So the both spacecrafts that were sent by the NASA in the 70s, I think, are now in the very outskirts of the solar system. And by the same technique as measuring the velocities of the star, we can measure the velocity of both spacecrafts by the Doppler shift from the signal that the craft is sending to us. And it seems that those crafts are moving too slowly compared to what Newton's laws would predict. So there are two possibilities. Either there is something we don't understand about the signal that those crafts are sending to us. Either Newton's law are already incorrect in the outer solar system, and actually the closest indication that gravity might not be what we think it is might be the Pioneer Anomaly in the outer solar system. For the Kuiper Belt objects, if we would know very precisely their position, distance, and motion, it would be very easy to test Mond in the very outer Kuiper Belt, or for example, by looking at the motion of comets inside the Oort cloud. But these objects are much too faint, and the problem is that comets, we only see them when they come across us, but we never see them when they are in their nursery place, which we call the Oort cloud. Mm. So the problem is that those objects inside the solar system where we could test Mond are too far away to be seen by us, because they just don't reflect the light from the Sun enough to be seen as we see the Moon, because it reflects the light from the Sun. If the Moon was in the outer solar system, then the Sun would be like a point, just another star in the sky, and wouldn't emit enough light for us to see it by reflection of light. So that's the reason why we have some difficulties to test the motion of these objects.
For the Pioneer Anomaly, why can we not explain that with dark matter?
So that's a good point. And the fact is that the dark matter density inside the solar system is actually very weak. So dark matter, the dark matter density makes a huge contribution at the galactic level, because if you put a constant density and then you put a huge volume, then it makes a huge difference. But if you put the same constant density and put it in a very small volume, then the contribution is much lower. So that's mainly the reason why dark matter is not present inside the solar system. However, in the cold dark matter theories, there should be formations of halos of dark matter at every scale. So why isn't there a halo of dark matter at the scale of the solar system? But those very small scale halos that we call microhalos that are actually formed in cold dark matter simulations. Cold dark matter is the generic term to call the dark matter that particle physicists think might be the best candidate to explain dark matter. Those microhalos of cold dark matter actually disrupted when they meet stars inside during their orbits inside the galaxy, and they don't survive, and that's why they are not present at the solar system.
Of course, the presence of dark matter itself in these halos or otherwise is also theoretical. We're sort of saying that if dark matter exists, it has these properties. We would like it to have these properties.
Exactly,
it should exist in this form.
Exactly, but we are absolutely not sure of that. And once again, there are two different kinds of physicists: the observers and the theorists. And in every subject in physics, there is always an interplay between those two kinds of scientists. Observers just say dark matter should be there, and theorists say we would hope dark matter to behave like that. If it doesn't, we will change the nature of dark matter. That's always like that.
Is there some other way that we can test MOND?
So for the moment, I've spoken about the very big scales, the galaxy cluster scales and the galaxy scales, and I've just spoken about the solar system. There is another kind of scale where we could test MOND, which is what we call the globular cluster scale. So globular clusters are a set of stars that are much smaller than galaxies and that are actually orbiting around galaxies, and especially around our own Milky Way. And MOND predicts that globular clusters that are in the outskirts of the Milky Way, our own galaxy, should behave abnormally if MOND is correct. Which means that if we find that there should be, in the Newtonian framework, some dark matter to explain the motion of stars within those globular clusters, then it would be a successful prediction of MOND. But if we see that as the globular clusters that are inside the Milky Way, the globular clusters outside the Milky Way are behaving exactly in the same way, in a Newtonian way, without dark matter at this scale, then it would be a false prediction of MOND. And as I told you, in galaxy clusters, MOND has a problem because it doesn't predict that the observed matter is enough to explain the motion of galaxies within galaxy clusters, but then you can always invoke the usual dark matter, even in the MOND framework. But in globular clusters, if we observe that they are behaving in a Newtonian way, and MOND predicts that there shouldn't be a dark matter effect, then this means that MOND predicts too much gravity, and that the only way around would be to put negative dark matter inside globular clusters, which would be they're a step too far, and which would probably kill MOND. So that should be one of the stringent tests for the MOND theory.
It's a good point. We should point out that MOND doesn't exclude the existence of dark matter. It just requires less of it to explain observations.
Exactly.
So when we talk about MOND and the equation that everybody knows about, the 1 upon d squared law of gravity from Newton, is the modified Newtonian version of that equation proportional to 1 upon d exactly? Or is it somewhere between the two?
In the very weak regime, it's precisely 1 over d. And there is, of course, an interpolation between the Newtonian regime and the MOND regime, which is kind of free. And we use galaxy rotation curves, actually, to find the best interpolation between the Newtonian regime, which is the strong gravity regime, and the weak regime, which is the MOND regime. As I told you, when the gravitational acceleration is much lower than an angstrom per second square, then we are exactly in a 1 over d low. When we are much higher than an angstrom per second square, then we are precisely in a 1 over d square low. But when we are of the order of an angstrom per second square, then we are in between.
Right, right. Well, I'm sure that if Newton were alive today, he would allow himself to be corrected, and we look forward to finding out whether MOND is correct. So thank you very much indeed for talking to us today.
My pleasure.